Hey everyone, Garrett Exner, board member of Veterans on Duty, former Marine Raider, back with another episode of Beyond the Call. We're here today in the United States Senate in this awesome recording studio, and we're going to be speaking with Senator Joni Ernst from the great state of Iowa. She's a 23-year veteran in the United States Army, and she's actually the first female combat veteran to serve in the United States Senate. It's an incredible story that she's got and a ton of insight into the hardship of deployments, the hardship families face. I really hope you guys enjoy the conversation. Senator Joni Ernst, I don't know if many people know this. You were valedictorian of your high school. You go to Iowa State University. It seems like you could have done anything in the world at that time. Just such a bright future ahead of you. And you join ROTC. Why did you want to join the Army Reserves? Why ROTC?
Yeah, Garrett, thank you. And I think I could have gone anywhere and done anything. I grew up in a family, though, in rural southwest Iowa, small farm family. My parents were high school educated, so they really didn't know how to advise me on going to college or, you know, what should come after college. I always imagined I would grow up and marry a farmer and live the good life in Montgomery County, Iowa. Mm-hmm. But when I went to Iowa State University, I got there on scholarships, and then I had the opportunity to go on an agricultural exchange to the Ukraine. And this was in 1989, and it was still part of the Soviet Union. So the experience that I had in the Soviet Union, and knowing at that time the United States is a world superpower, so is the Soviet Union, I always thought as a young woman that we'd have the same opportunities. The family that I lived with in Ukraine, you know, would have all of the same advantages that maybe I did in Iowa. And I found none of that to be true. They were still farming with horses and wagons on this collective farm. They had no telephone, no refrigerator, no indoor plumbing. And I've always been a proud American. But when I got back to the United States after that experience in the Soviet Union, I was like, wow, my country is tremendous. I'm a small town farm girl. I've been able to go to college. And what can I do to support my country? And that was by joining Army ROTC and devoting my life to service.
Can you talk a little bit about that, you know, born and raised in Iowa, but how you translate some of the threats the United States faces, the global threats, right? You know, that kind of conveying that message that you just went through of visiting Ukraine and seeing it. How do you convey that to small town farmers, you know, Main Street store owners in Iowa, the threats and the sense of urgency that the United States needs to take to deal with these threats? How do you convey that to Iowans on an everyday basis?
It is difficult because so many of us that are now getting older, a little more gray hair, we went through the Cold War and we felt the threats of communism. And many of our young people today haven't experienced that. And so we felt those pressures. We know how precious our values and our liberties are here in the United States of America. And we have to remind people today that that threat is ever present. So whether it is through terrorist proxies that will target Americans overseas or here on, at the homeland, whether it's the threat of socialism or communism broadly from Russia and China, if we are not present, if we are not sharing our values, our Western ideologies, there will be a vacuum and there will be others like President Xi in China, like Vladimir Putin in Russia, that will take up that space. So we need to always be pushing back. And I believe in soft power, of course, you know, just negotiations, trade, working on education between countries. I think that's important. But we always have to have a strong military to back that up.
Amen.
Iowans get our liberties and freedoms. And if you pose it in a way that someday those could be infringed upon or taken away by a foreign entity, do you want that? Do you not want that? If you don't want that, then we need to be an ever-present, ever-strong nation.
It sounds great to me. I want to jump back into a little bit of your story. So you graduate, you get your master's, you're in the Army Reserve. About 10 years later, you have to take a company on deployment. It's a year-long deployment. I'm going to guess around 150 soldiers, 200 soldiers.
150 soldiers, exactly.
How did you mentally, spiritually, emotionally, like, prepare to lead 150 soldiers away for an entire year? That's a long time.
It was very difficult. So at that time of my life, I had a daughter that was 3 years old, and so it was very difficult as a young mother to know that I was going to spend not just a year, but at this time, mobilization was not counted in that year, that 365 boots on ground. So I was actually away from my family for 14 months, including the mobilization demob process that I went through in the Guard. So spiritually, that was really important to me. And I think that's part of my own journey as a Christian, is understanding that no matter what the circumstances, that, you know, I'm a believer and God is there. So that was very important for me to hold on to that through not only the preparation to go overseas, but the entire time I was overseas. Physically, I was in much better shape as a young woman than I am now.
I
still do, and I love it. It keeps me, you know, tied into the military community. But you do have to be prepared for that. A year is a long time to be away from family. But then you also have to think about those really difficult things. You know, is my will prepared? Yeah. You know, if something happens, what about the care, you know, helping my husband with my child? I mean, there are just so many things that you wrestle with pre-deployment, and your headspace has to be right before you deploy. So having all of that taken care of, just knowing where I am as a Christian and then moving through the deployment, it really was very important. Having those friends and family supporting.
Do you think the year timeline, I mean, you've been a tremendous advocate for service members, for military families. Do you think that year timeline, do you think we got it wrong for the 20 years of the global war on terror of sending people away for a year? Do you think that needs to be shortened? Soft got into this. More frequent, so higher frequency 4-month deployment. So we'd shorten the deployment, do it more often. Do you think one of those is better than the other? Do you think there's a better way that we could have done this?
You know, hindsight's always 20/20, but I do think every mission will have different requirements. And so, you know, sitting here today, I can't say that should we ever get into another conflict, heaven forbid, that we would require our troops to be overseas for a year. I don't want to say that today. It is a long time to be separated from our loved ones. Truly, it is. So I think, you know, perhaps a shorter time frame, more frequent deployments could be better. But again, every circumstance and even the conditions on the ground, depending on where you are in the world, it really does make a difference.
Yeah. Well, speaking of your advocacy, I got to say, and I mentioned this to you before the interview started, that in the soft community, so I'll start with this. You are the chair of the ETC subcommittee. For those watching who don't know, this is the Emerging Threats and Capabilities subcommittee. It is the committee of jurisdiction for U.S. SOCOM.
Yes.
And you are known in Fayetteville, in Stone Bay, in Tampa, as being, and I don't even know if you're aware of this, as being the kind of the fighter for the soft community, the advocate for SOCOM. I loved it. I've been in meetings where it has been said, and I hope it's not offensive that they use your first name, but they say, if we can get Joni on board on this, she will fight for us. I've been in multiple meetings where that has been said, and it's kind of incredible. How did that come about? How did you come into the Senate saying, I'm going to be the patron saint of the soft community? Or like, how did this grow into being?
No, I really appreciate that. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate the men and women of SOF. They are very near and dear to me. And no, it was well before I ever even imagined I would be a public servant serving an elected office. Fortunately, I've had the great privilege of knowing so many incredible heroes that have come up through SOF. And many of them have passed on. I think of Colonel Ralph Puckett, who was a dear friend of mine. But I think of the incredible men and now women that are serving in those boots. and what they do as force multipliers to, you know, hopefully prevent greater scale conflict. Mm-hmm. But so having that connection and knowing some of those individuals who at the time were lieutenants and captains that now are serving in the general officer ranks, in the sergeant major ranks. Again, I feel very passionate, just not about them as individuals, but collectively in these units. So understanding that, I have spent time as a spouse, again, at Ranger Regiment. I've spent time as a spouse down in Florida, the Florida phase of Ranger School. I could tell you more about Ranger School than maybe most of the students. It's really important for me to support all of these incredible people because they do so much that will never, ever be discussed in public, in polite society.
Well, I'll tell you, they appreciate it 100%. They appreciate all the work you're doing. And I also want to touch on recruitment issues. We've been in kind of a recruitment crisis over the last 4 years. Now, I think we've turned a corner here under President Trump and the leadership of Secretary Hegseth. You are proposing that there's more work to do, that there's more help that we can provide recruiters on the ground. I'd love to just ask you about the Serve Act and how we can kind of expand recruitment or at least help those recruiters out because they are working hard right now. They're working overtime.
They are working very, very hard. And we see this in every state. But the Serve Act, you know, opening up more recruiting opportunities in our public schools, and this is really important. And I want to push this out there for your listeners that there are 15% of the schools across the United States that do not allow recruiters on their campuses. By law, they are required. Mm-hmm. To be allowed into a certain space to be able to talk to students. Yeah. Many of them deny recruiters that opportunity. So we are going back. We are fixing this through the Serve Act, opening up those opportunities, opening up more JROTC opportunities. We know if we can get young men and women interested through JROTC, they're more likely to follow on with service, whether it's in the military or another type of service following high school. So we're working on all of those avenues. And then we're also rewarding those schools that with like a Heroes Award for those that have high enlistments coming out of school. So a lot of opportunity there, but we want to show it's the right thing to serve. You know, it's an honor to serve. And I have to say, even though I'm sitting in the United States Senate, the greatest honor of my life was serving in uniform.
That was actually going to be my next question, because I mean, 23 years of service in uniform, you're continuing to serve now, but you are also practicing what you preach in that you have a daughter who went to the United States Military Academy, which is remarkable. Just that you raised a daughter that met all the standards to get into that school. It is one of the best schools in the country. But that you ingrained in her a life of service, that she would want to serve, which is incredible. I have a young daughter. My wife went to the Naval Academy. It would bring tears to my eyes to see her in uniform and going to a service academy. I can't imagine how proud you are. But what do you say? This was my question. You kind of got into it. What do you say to a young woman in particular who wants to join or is considering joining but has some reservations about service and what it's going to be like? Is the culture right for me or whatever that hesitation might be? How do you kind of get them past that and say, this is the best thing you're ever going to do?
You know, I always have honest conversations. The military will not be right for everybody, but I will say it's right for most. It will physically challenge you. It will mentally challenge you. But for me, it was those challenges. That's why, you know, I wanted to push myself. I wanted to do something for my country. And doing that, I knew that if I can overcome these obstacles, if I can get right in my own head and take on mentally whatever the drill sergeants are throwing at me, I know I can achieve pretty much anything in my life. Awesome. And it brought great leadership opportunities to me. And I also learned how to be a good follower. And I think that's really important when you go into corporate activity, whether you're a small business owner, it doesn't matter. You need to know leadership, but you also know need to know how to be a good follower too. So I think it just broadens the opportunities that young women will have. And again, it's about serving your country, and that shouldn't be reserved just for men. It's, mm-hmm. you know, it is something where we can become stronger individuals and believe more in ourselves as well.
I love that. I'm married to a woman who served. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad I get to be married to a veteran. She makes me better on a regular basis. The last question for me, you know, we ask members that come in to bring a coin from their time in service or after service, mm-hmm. something that's important to you, and maybe tell the story of that coin of why it's so important. Hopefully you have one with you, or are you going to tell us the story?
I don't have one in here with me. Do you have yours on you?
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. Well, I just gave Garrett a coin, so I will tell you about it. And this is a great story. When I came into the Senate in 2015, January, mm-hmm. There was a young man I had gone to. Well, young man, you know, we're older now. He was at Iowa State when I was there in ROTC. And he served in SOF. But he was here in the Washington, D.C. area at the time I was coming into the Senate. Mm-hmm. But the reason he was here is because he was at Walter Reed. Oh. And he had been shot up pretty bad in Afghanistan. And so I spent a lot of time over at Walter Reed with him as he was going through his rehab. He had lost a leg and the eyesight in his left eye. And he said, "Hey, Joni, you know, you had a challenge coin as a company commander, as a battalion commander." Mm-hmm. He's like, "You need one in the Senate." And I was like, "Okay, Owen, I will get one in the Senate if you design it for me." So this is designed by a dear friend of mine from Harlan, Iowa. And on one side, it has the Minuteman, because I retired out of the Iowa Army National Guard. The Minuteman is, that's part of our logo. The state of Iowa flag, the flag of the state of Iowa, the flag of the United States. On the other side, it has the Senate seal. But what's important to me are the four phrases around the outer edge of the coin. So four pillars that I've lived by. So leadership, you know, and the Army defines that as someone who will inspire others to follow towards a common goal or objective for the good of the unit or the organization. So leadership, it says nothing about title or rank. It's will you inspire others? Service, we know all about service. I won't go into that. And then taking prudent risk. You know, I had a general officer in Iowa that always used to say, "Joni, you need to take more risk. You know, figure it out. Figure out pros and cons. Mm-hmm. If it's the right thing to do, take it. Take prudent risk." And that's right. You're not going to get ahead if you're not taking risks.
That sounds like a great leader.
And then the final one, and the one that is most important to me, is gratitude. You know, how many times are we busting a soldier because they've done something bad? How often do we take the time to say thank you for those that are doing an extraordinary job or helping us? Mm-hmm. We have family and friends that have helped us get to where we are today. We need to make sure we're taking the time to share our gratitude.
Absolutely.
So, with that, Garrett, my gratitude. God bless you.
Thank you so much. Well, we are grateful for your leadership and your service. Thank you for everything you're doing up there, for your advocacy for SOF, and for solving this recruitment process. Thank you so much for being on this show.
It's great to be with you. Thanks so much.
Here at Veterans on Duty, we are a policy advocacy organization focused on making sure our military is strong, lethal, and focused. All of that, of course, is about making sure America is safe, strong, and free. Those are the values that we hold dear at Vets on Duty, and that's why we're gonna be sitting down with different leaders, veterans, policymakers, even some elected officials in our Beyond the Call video series. Stay tuned and join us.